or silence, and so gave away more than they knew. Servants circulated through the guests, slender, golden-haired youths, proffering wine with a bow and a wordless smile. Young men and young women alike, they wore tight white breeches and flowing white shirts. And male and female alike, they moved with disturbing grace. Each looked more than a mirror image of the others, the boys as handsome as the girls were beautiful. He doubted he could distinguish one from another, and he had an eye and a memory for faces. A smiling, white-clad girl offered her tray of crystal goblets to him. He took one with no intention of drinking. It might appear untrusting, or worse, and either could be deadly here, if he refused altogether, but anything could be slipped into a drink. Surely some among his companions would have no objections to seeing the number of their rivals for power dwindle, whomever the unlucky ones happened to be. Idly he wondered whether the servants would have to be disposed of after this meeting. Servants hear everything. As the serving girl straightened from her bow, his eye caught hers above that sweet smile. Blank eyes. Empty eyes. A doll's eyes. Eyes more dead than death. He shivered as she moved gracefully away and raised the goblet to his lips before he caught himself. It was not what had been done to the girl that chilled him. Rather, every time he thought he detected a weakness in those he now served, he found himself preceded, the supposed weakness cut out with a ruthless precision that left him amazed and worried. The first rule of his life had always been to search for weakness, for every weakness was a chink where he could probe and pry and influence. If his current masters, his masters for the moment, had no weakness... Frowning behind his mask, he studied his companions. At least there was plenty of weakness there. Their nervousness betrayed them, even those who had sense enough to guard their tongues. A stiffness in the way this one held himself, a jerkiness in the way that one handled her skirts. A good quarter of them, he estimated, had not bothered with disguise beyond the black masks. Their clothes told much. A woman standing before a gold and crimson wall hanging, speaking softly to a figure, impossible to say whether it was man or woman, cloaked and hooded in gray. She had obviously chosen the spot because the colors of the tapestry set off her garb. Doubly foolish to draw attention to herself, for her scarlet dress, cut low in the bodice, to show too much flesh and high at the hem to display golden slippers, marked her from Ilion, and a woman of wealth, perhaps even of noble blood. Not far beyond the Ilyana, another woman stood, alone and admirably silent. With a swan's neck and lustrous black hair falling in waves below her waist, she kept her back to the stone wall, observing everything. No nervousness there, only serene self-possession. Very admirable, that, but her coppery skin and her creamy, high-necked gown, leaving nothing but her hands uncovered, yet clinging and only just barely opaque, so that it hinted at everything and revealed nothing, marked her just as clearly of the first blood of Ara-Doman. And unless the man who called himself Bors missed his guess entirely, the wide golden bracelet on her left wrist bore her house symbols. That would be for her own house. No Domani bloodborn would bend her stiff pride enough to wear the sigils of another house. Worse than foolishness. A man in a high-collared, sky-blue Shinaran coat passed him with a wary head-to-toe glance through the eye-holes of his mask. The man's carriage named him Soldier. The set of his shoulders, the way his gaze never rested in one place for long, and the way his hand seemed ready to dart for a sword that was not there, all proclaimed it. The Shinaran wasted little time on the man who called himself Bors. Stooped shoulders and a bent back held no threat. The man who called himself Bors snorted as the Shinaran moved on, right hand clenching and eyes already studying elsewhere for danger. He could read them all, to class and country. Merchant and warrior, commoner and noble. From Kandor and Kyrian, Saldaea and Giladan. From every nation and nearly every people. His nose wrinkled in sudden disgust. Even a tinker, in bright green breeches and a virulent yellow coat. We can do without those come the day. The disguised ones were no better, many of them cloaked and shrouded as they were. He caught sight, under the edge of one dark robe, of the silver-worked boots of a High Lord of Tyr, and under another, a glimpse of golden lion-head spurs worn only by high officers in the Andorran Queen's Guards. A slender fellow, slender even in a floor-dragging black robe and an anonymous gray cloak, caught with a plain silver pin, watched from the shadows of his deep cowl. He could be anyone from anywhere, except for the six-pointed star tattooed on the web between thumb and forefinger of his right hand. One of the sea folk, then, and a look at his left hand would show the marks of his clan and line. The man who called himself Bors did not bother to try. Suddenly his eyes narrowed, fixing on a woman, enveloped in black till nothing showed but her fingers. On her right hand rested a gold ring in the shape of a serpent eating its own tail. Aes Sedai, or at least a woman trained in Tar Valon by Aes Sedai. None else would wear that ring. Either way made no difference to him. He looked away before she could notice his watching, and almost immediately he spotted another woman swathed from head to toe in black and wearing a great serpent ring. The two witches gave no sign that they knew each other. In the White Tower they sat like spiders in the middle of a web, pulling the strings that made kings and queens dance, meddling. Curse them all to death eternal. He realized that he was grinding his teeth. If numbers must dwindle, and they must before the day, there were some who would be missed even less than tinkers. A chime sounded, a single shivering note that came from everywhere at once and cut off all other sounds like a knife. The tall doors at the far end of the chamber swung open, and two Trollocs stepped into the room, spikes decorating the black mail that hung to their knees. Everyone shied back, even the man who called himself Bors. Head and shoulders taller than the tallest man there, they were a stomach-turning blend of man and animal, human faces twisted and altered. One had a heavy, pointed beak where his mouth and nose should have been, and feathers covered his head instead of hair. The other walked on hooves, his face pushed out in a hairy muzzle, and goat horns stuck up above his ears. Ignoring the humans, the Trollocs turned back toward the door and bowed, servile and cringing. The feathers on the one lifted in a tight crest. A Murdral stepped between them, and they fell to their knees. It was garbed in black that made the Trollocs' mail and the humans' masks seem bright, garments that hung still, without a ripple. The man who called himself Bors felt his lips drawing back over his teeth, half snarl and half, he was ashamed to admit even to himself, fear. It had its face uncovered, its pasty, pale face, a man's face, but eyeless as an egg, like a maggot in a grave. The smooth white face swiveled, regarding them all one by one, it seemed. A visible shiver ran through them under that eyeless look. Thin, bloodless lips quirked in what might almost have been a smile, as one by one the masked ones tried to press back into the crowd, milling to avoid that gaze. The Murdral's look shaped them into a semicircle facing the door. The one who called himself Bors swallowed.
There will come a day, half-man, when the great lord of the dark comes again. He will choose his new dreadlords, and you will cower before them. You will cower before men, before me. Why doesn't it speak? Stop staring at me and speak.
Your master comes,
the Murdral's voice rasped like a dry snakeskin crumbling.
To your bellies, worms! Grovel lest his brilliance blind and burn you.
Rage filled the man who called himself Bors at the tone as much as the words, but then the air above the halfman shimmered, and the import drove home.
It can't be. It can't.
The Trollocs were already on their bellies, writhing as if they wanted to burrow into the floor. Without waiting to see if anyone else moved, the man who called himself Bors dropped face down, grunting as he bruised himself on the stone. Words sprang to his lips like a charm against danger. They were a charm, though a thin reed against what he feared. And he heard 100 other voices, breathy with fear, speaking the same against the floor.
The great lord of the dark is my master, and most heartily do I serve him to the last shred of my very soul.
In the back of his mind,